Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area, where we explore people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hello, Paul.
Well, welcome, Susan. Susan's been up on the lake all summer. She lives on a boat. Welcome to dry land.
Well, yes, Paul, it's great to be back on dry land and back in the studio for the fall season.
In fact, the main topic today is the fall season, our fall season for drama in Central Iowa, brought to us by community theater associations all around us here. Even tuning into agriculture will be pretty dramatic, and our ag reporter, Greta Anderson, will have an interview with Jim Hightower.
Well, and why would Jim Hightower be so dramatic?
Well, the best way to answer that is to read how he introduces himself. Jim Hightower is a national radio commentator, writer, public speaker, and author of the book Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now, Jim Hightower has spent four decades battling the powers that be on behalf of the powers that ought to be. Consumers, working families, environmentalists, small businesses, and just plain folks. He was twice elected Texas Agriculture Commissioner, and Hightower believes that the true political spectrum is not right to left, but top to bottom. And he has become a leading national voice for 80% of the public who no longer find themselves within shouting distance of Washington or Wall Street and the powers that be on top. Hightower is a modern-day Johnny Appleseed, and he spreads the message of progressive populism all across the American grassroots. And like theater companies, we'll be featuring today. He'll be performing this coming weekend, so stay tuned for the end of the show, and we'll tell you more about that.
Well, that sounds interesting, but he has a lot of competition this weekend, and our studio guest, Stan Raby, is here to tell us about one of the star attractions, Nonsense, at the Story City Grand Opera House. Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday, Stan.
Thank you, Susan.
Now, we're especially pleased that you're here for our broadcast at 7 in the morning. Thanks for getting up early, Stan. Those who listen at noon or 7 p.m., may know you as guest on KHOI's Previews the Arts with Carol Horowitz, who covers the Ames and Des Moines area. But this actor's play is going on the road and will open at Story City's Grand Opera House on Saturday. You are the producer for Nonsense, and could you tell us about that show, Stan?
Sure. Nonsense is a delightful musical comedy that was first staged, I want to say, in the 1970s. And it's about the Sisters of Hoboken. Sister Julia, child of God, has made a bad batch of Ishiswa and has poisoned several of the nuns. And so now the sisters are left with having to raise enough money to bury the dead nuns.
Oh, that sounds morbid, Stan.
It's kind of dark humor because all these dead nuns are being stored in the freezer.
That's convenient.
Well, you got to put them someplace.
Right.
And as Sister Robert Ann says, New Jersey smells bad enough already. So they're raising money to get the nuns out of the freezer and to get them buried. And so they're having a talent show. And so the five nuns, the Mother Superior, Robert Ann, Sister Hubert, Sister Amnesia, and Sister Leo just trot their talents across the stage and thoroughly entertain and delight the audiences.
It sounds like a great premise and sounds like it would demand a great cast of certain individuals who are mature, shall we say.
Well, you know, it does require a good cast because since there are only five nuns, each nun has about one-fifth of an entire show to memorize and to perform. So it's a lot of memorization. It's a lot of stamina. They have to have good, strong voices. So, yeah, it's a demanding show for the ladies that get cast. And our ladies are fabulous. We've got Jill Smolik, who's a high school student, who is our Sister Leo. She is tremendous. And then Sister Amnesia is Abby Epperson, who just recently moved to Central Iowa. She lives in Boone, is attending Iowa State as a freshman. is delightful as Amnesia. She's got a fabulous singing voice. We have two nuns who are driving up from Des Moines. Jill Curry is Sister Hubert, and Rebecca Masucci is the Mother Superior. And then our own from Ames, Iowa, Susan Norris, is Sister Robert Ann, and she's terrific.
So you had very good fortune in finding great people to be in the cast.
You know, it was great fortune. It can be hard to find people who will take on that big of part. And we had very good auditions for the show, so we were very fortunate.
You know, that always seems to be the case. I've been active in community theater, and somehow, for every production, people come out of the woodwork from somewhere, and you end up with great people, though it might be worrisome, you know, when you go into the early stages of this to find the people you need for the cast. And I've never seen it fail. People come forward somehow.
And, you know, I think it's something that everybody has always kind of wanted to do, and it's just the opportunity and that last little bit of motivation to get them to try out. And people have a good time when they're doing a show. That's the thing that's so delightful about community theater, is that it's as much fun for the people on stage as it is for the people who come and see our shows. And rehearsals are as much fun as performance. So it's a great form of entertainment, and it's a great way to meet people. You have a good, it's community building in its own way. So community is not just the fact that it's in the city of Ames, but it is community building.
You know, in the shows I've been in, there's a sense of family. And so you work throughout the rehearsal schedule. Then there's production and all the intensity of the run. And then there's the bittersweet night when you close. And it's a time of great accomplishment and a real high, but at the same time, you know you're going to be leaving this tight group that's formed over the period of rehearsal and production. I love that experience. It's bittersweet.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like a big project management experience, because you build a team, and the team all has one thing in mind in terms of objective and what they're going to do and how it's going to happen and everything else. And then when you reach the objective and, you know, you kind of celebrate the success of the entire project, the thing that's really sad is that exact team is never going to get together again. It's the last time they've ever gotten together, and we just did Shrek in the spring, and it was amazing how close all of those characters had become. And, that's exactly what it is.
And, you know, my experience has been at the Drama Workshop in Des Moines and the Community Playhouse in Des Moines, and also at Judge Story Theatrical Troupe in Story City, and that brings up Veronica Score, who directed Nonsense, and she did the run here in Actors in Ames. And now tell me what's happening. This show that's been running in Ames now is on the road to Story City.
Yeah, we're packing up our nuns and our habits, and we're going to take them to Story City for Saturday night. Since Veronica is from Story City, the discussion started happening early on if actors would be willing to move the show up to Story City for a performance. And we all thought it would be a very interesting experiment, if you will, to see how well an actor show would sell in Story City. And this is a great show to do it with, because the show is highly portable. It moves very nicely. And with Veronica and Jamie and James and Jonah, all the people that up in Story City, the crew people were all involved in the show, so that they could do all the setup in Story City for the show. That was just, it was the perfect opportunity to do it. So we're doing the show Saturday night, October 3rd, at 7:30 in the Grand Opera House in Story City. And it'll be fun for the actors people, because they get to see this show, they get to do the show on a totally different stage and in a different environment. And Actors Building is unique because it is so small and compact, while the Grand Opera House is certainly more grand than the Actors Building. Yeah. So it'll be a unique experience.
Yeah, the Grand Opera House is, it's the longest continuously operating movie theater west of the Mississippi. My mother went to silent movies in that place. And so
wow.
only since the 80s has it been restored for performance. And we have the Jed Story Theatrical Troupe founded in the 80s when we began to do shows at the theater. And Veronica actually has directed the last several shows
yes.
we put on. Every spring we put on a major musical as part of Scandinavian Days. And, you know, we've had years and years of production in Story City, and the big challenge always in community theater is finding directors, people who are willing to do what really amounts to a year's commitment of trying to put things together, finding actors, setting up people to help with the crew. And Veronica has really been a trooper at that, and she has so much energy that she's able to do these shows at Jed Story in Story City. Then you find out she's doing a show with actors also.
Yeah, directing a show is a huge commitment because it's more than just telling people where to go on the stage. You have to have a vision in terms of what the set is going to look like and how it works and what the costumes need to look like and how they'll change clothes and down to the point of the details of what gets moved where, when, and how the lights look. And so I know when I've directed, I've started working on the show easily 12 months before the show. As soon as it's selected and I know that I'm going to direct the show, I get a script and we start looking at what it takes to put on a show. So the fact that Veronica has now directed two shows back to back is a huge commitment on her part because these were both big shows. Little Shop of Horrors and Nonsense are detailed kinds of productions. So she's done a fabulous job.
Well, the great thing about Veronica is that she's brought more recently written material to the stage at Story City.
Yeah.
We've done all the classic great shows, My Fair Lady and Carousel in Oklahoma. And being younger, Veronica's brought some of the more recently written stuff and stuff that is a little unusual for our stage. She also produced Into the Woods a while
mm-hmm.
back. And this is a real good thing for our audience to be refreshed by what we know is more recent things than the old classic 1940s and 50s theater. And Veronica's been tremendous there. So this Saturday night at 7:30, Nonsense at the Grand Opera House in Story City, Iowa, featuring the Nuns of Hoboken. And I just can't, I've been waiting to say this. Sister Amnesia will have an unforgettable performance.
She will have an unforgettable performance. And I've been waiting to say, and it'd be a sin to miss the show.
Oh, man, we're so loaded with puns and plays on words that we better stop this, Stan.
Our
guest has been Stan Ravy today, and he has directed at actors in here in Ames and finished their run of Nonsense. And now the production's moving to Story City on this Saturday night, October 3rd, 7:30 at the Grand Opera House in Story City.
Well, we are very fortunate now to have someone who will give us a critique of that performance with a lot of expertise, Louine Getter from Webster City. And I believe you know her, Stan.
Yes.
And so would you welcome her for us?
Well, good morning, Louine. Thank you for calling in so early in the morning.
Well, it just worked out perfect.
Good.
I had talked to you earlier in the week, and you told me what you thought of the performance, and you have a little expertise in Nonsense, I believe.
Well, it happened that back in 1992, I directed Nonsense for Webster City Community Theater, and since then have done five others of Dan Goggins' Nonsense musicals, and had a delightful time doing so with a variety of different people playing the nuns. Had several repeats, you know, where they would play, for example, Sister Robert Ann or Sister Hubert or Sister Leo. And so it's been a wonderful series for our theater to do. Our audiences love those nuns, and it was a pleasure to be able to the performance at Actors last weekend and be able to enjoy another set of fabulously talented women in those roles. And so I applaud actors, and I would say if you didn't get a chance to see it in Ames, because I think the crowds were pretty well sold out, that they try and catch it Saturday in Story City.
Yes, it really was a great performance to enjoy. The audience participation really impressed me. And the way the nuns interacted with the audience, which is sort of unusual. Everything about this play was a little unexpected and unusual, unless you happen to have seen it before. And I imagine some people had, but it was very engaging.
Dan Gockins has a way of writing these with very fun songs, some very poignant songs, and then the patter among the nuns, and like you say, as they break the fourth wall and involve the audience, is really the key to the success of these shows.
You also were earlier talking with me when we were talking about the success of the other, what is it, five? There's actually six total nonsense plays?
He has actually written nine. One of those is an all-male version of the show. And then one is just, it's called Sister Robert's Ann Cabaret, and it's a one-woman show. But the other seven are all involving these five nuns, and then two of them, Father Virgil makes an appearance. And so, yeah, there's Nonsense, Nonsense 2, the Christmas show, Nuncrackers. There's the Western, country Western show, Jamboree, Nonsense Jamboree. Nunset Boulevard, which takes place in Hollywood. Nunsensations, which takes place in Las Vegas. And I think that's the seven.
Well, that's something to look forward to. We have something really unusual here today. We have another call-in. Somebody else trying to call in, and we have just one line. So would you hang up and let us talk to this person, and then we'll call you back and tell you who it was who was trying to call in?
Okay, I can do that.
Okay, all right. See if we can get that other call-in lined up. I can't imagine who would be trying to call us.
Especially at this hour of the day. I'm glad to hear someone's up and listening. That's great. Our engineer is looking this over and on the phone. We just got a call from it's Reverend Mother Mary Regina, the Mother Superior of Little Sisters of Hoboken. This is a real honor. She must be streaming our program. I know she can't get it on broadcast in New York.
Sister, are you there, Mother Superior?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, why did you call in?
Well, I did hear that you were speaking about my group and my organization, and I thought I might just need to ask a couple of questions or maybe be available to answer a couple of questions.
Are you there in Hoboken with the Little
yes.
Sisters?
Yes, I am.
Do you know about, actually, how did everything come out? Did you get the nuns buried and everything?
Well, there's a whole long story behind that, and we're going to be telling that here coming up in Story City. Now, I do hear that in Story City you do have lots of Lutheran churches, is that correct?
Yeah, we have a real supply of them. There are three, all because Lutherans had trouble getting along in the early 20th century.
Oh,
and they still do.
Interesting. Well, I do, this is Paul I'm speaking.
Yeah, that's right. I'm Paul's sister. How are you?
Good morning. I do hear that, I did hear the rumor that they started up a Lutheran church, especially for you.
Yeah.
So you could be the pastor or lead that church. Is that correct?
I have been known to give sermons in Lutheran churches, so this is a hazardous duty. I should get a Purple Heart for that, I think.
Yes. Well, I find that very impressive. They started that for you. That's just wonderful. Now, in your church, one thing that we do that we have a lot of fun with is bingo. Do you play bingo at your church?
Oh, no, Lutherans don't gamble. Everything has to be a certainty because we're farmers and everything there is risky.
Oh, I see. Well, we do have a lot of fun with that bingo. People have said that it is more thrilling than skydiving. Have you heard that?
I heard that, yes, from skydivers who were sitting around with broken legs. They take up bingo as another thrill.
Excellent. Well, I'm certainly glad that they have been able to find something to do. That's wonderful. Now, do you happen to be standing?
No, I'm sitting because I'm an old man.
Well, see, when you're speaking with the sisters, you really should stand.
Is that right?
You know that rule? Yes.
Well, you're not going to hit me across the knuckle with a ruler, sorry.
That's true. That's,
see,
well, that is true.
Engineer,
quite far away.
I should say our engineer here today is Jonah. He's an Ames High School student, and as soon as you said stand, he obediently stood.
Oh, that is just wonderful. Yeah, bless you, Jonah.
Well, wait till after he graduates. He won't do anything we tell him.
Oh. I'm sure he's quite the nice boy. I like him already.
Not only nice, but good-looking, talented, and a good keyboard artist, too.
Very nice. That's just wonderful. Have you spoken at all about our cook?
Julia, Child of God.
Child of God.
Julia, Child of God. That's a nice play on words. Julia, Child. Oh, well, I have to cook that stuff.
Yes.
I do, Julia, Child.
Well, we haven't talked about her. I think people will find out about her when they come to the play.
Oh, yes. They'll find out quite a lot about Sister Julia. She does get up to some shenanigans during our show, and prior to our show, actually.
Well, mostly prior to your show, because I believe she also is in the freezer. Or maybe not in the freezer. Maybe she's in the ground.
She's in the hospital.
Oh, she's in the hospital, but she was a lucky one.
And I think the audiences will be delighted by the truly creative recipes that Sister Julia has in her cookbook, Baking with the BVM. And so I think people are going to want to – these are things that you're going to want to try at home. It's better than watching cooking shows on TV.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Was that Stanley?
Yes, it was.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mother Superior. Bless you for calling in.
Oh, well, wonderful to hear from you as well. I hope you made it. I hope you had a wonderful journey this morning.
I did.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to have to talk about how Lutherans are going to handle the introduction to the play, because here in Ames, one of the nuns was out at the door handing out bingo cards so we could play bingo before the performance began. And maybe you won't have anybody to play bingo in Story City.
Oh, no. Sister Mary Stacy and Sister Mary Catherine will be there with their bingo apparatus. We will be playing bingo in Story City.
And bingo is played at the Senior Center on Wednesdays.
So. See, so they know all about this.
Well,
this will be easy.
It's like every church population. They sin during the week, you know.
And then ask for forgiveness on Sunday.
Exactly.
That's
automatic.
So rejuvenating, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
It's almost resurrecting, if you will.
Yeah, if you play bingo on Wednesday, you're going to be very humble by Sunday.
Well, and we have had to we have had to get a little bit out of hand at times, too, during the bingo game.
People
get excited, and we've been known to have to call Father to break up the fight between the Methodists and the Lutherans.
Oh, no, that's typical. Yeah, that's a mixed family if a Lutheran marries a Methodist. What about the children?
We always thought it was a mixed marriage if a Lutheran Missouri Synod married an ELCA.
That's right. Only one of them could have communion.
That's right.
I think we've gotten too far away from Catholic dogma right now, and I think we'd better thank you for your call, Sister Regina, Sister Mary Regina. Oh, Mother. I guess your Mother Mary Regina. Is that correct?
You can call me the Reverend Mother.
The it's Reverend fine. Mother. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you
for calling.
Thank you, everyone, and thank you for speaking with me.
Thanks for calling. You're a mystical figure. Now for the people who haven't caught the spirit of nonsense, we should credit the actress who played the part of Reverend Mother, Rebecca Masucci. And if you missed her when actors did the play here in Ames in September, you can see her and the other sisters at the Story City Grand Opera House this Saturday, October 3rd, 7:30. It's curtain time. We'll be looking forward to welcoming you there with bingo boards and all the other stuff that's going to be happening at the Grand Opera House, 7:30, Saturday night.
And I don't know how tickets have been handled by Judge Story Theatrical Troupe, but we will have tickets available at the door. If people would like to get their tickets beforehand, Actors has an online ticketing system so that they can get their tickets at www.actorsinc.org or at the door.
That's good, and I'll be buying at the door. I'm the last-minute guy.
Okay, and now we have called Louine back. Louine, are you with us again?
Yes, I am.
Our guest, the call-in, was the Reverend Mother Mary Regina. It's talking about that fourth wall. She broke the fourth wall and called this morning all the way from Hoboken. So we didn't even ask her what mystical system she used. Maybe she actually listened to us online, which is quite possible. But
you know how us Mother Superiors are. We know all.
That's right. And now what we wanted to call you back for was the performance that's going to open in Webster City this Friday with you. Not directing anymore. This is Drinking Habits, correct? Yes.
Webster City Community Theater does open Friday night with a farce by Tom Smith called Drinking Habits. It is not a musical, but it does have nuns, and it does have priests, and it has a couple of news reporters and a groundskeeper. And the characters really mix things up with a lot of mistaken identities and a little bit of romance thrown in for a real enjoyable comedy.
Well, I understand that you, since you're not directing, you are now in the cast, and your role is?
I do play the Mother Superior in the order called the Sisters of Perpetual Sewing. The two nuns, Sister Augusta and Sister Philomena, and myself, we are blessed to repair the gowns that belong to the Holy Church people. Anyone from the Pope on down that needs repairs, we're able to do that. A very small order, and as things turn out, we're afraid that Rome is going to close us down because we're rather insignificant, and we are afraid that they're sending someone to spy on us to see just what we do and report back to Rome that, yes, we are a very small order. And what I don't know is that in order to keep the coffers filled, my two sisters are manufacturing wine and selling it in the village. And that's what has kept our doors open, so to speak. The local priest gets involved in the show, and then there are two reporters that come trying to find the scoop on who won a $500,000 prize in a wine-making contest. So do you suppose it's the sisters? You'll have to come and find out.
Yes, it sounds like you've got all the makings of a good farce.
It is, it is. There's always lots of people coming in and out of all of the doors on the set.
And you also get to wear a habit this time and not just direct others who were wearing them. And what's it like?
Well, I have a lot of empathy now for the people that I have encouraged or forced to wear a habit, especially in the summertime when we perform some of the musicals. They are very warm. and with the wimple on, it changes how you hear things, and you hear yourself a lot better. And sometimes you don't hear others quite as well. But once you put that habit on, it creates a character for you.
You've been listening to KHOI, Community Radio 89.1 FM. We've been talking with Louine Getter about the insights that she had into both directing plays about nuns in Nonsense and in putting on the habit herself in Drinking Habits, the play that will be opening at the Webster City Community Theater this Friday. I'm playing the 2nd, 3rd, 8th, and 9th at 7:30 p.m. and the 4th and 11th Sunday matinees at 2. And on Saturdays, there will be a wine tasting, since this play deals with wine. That is why it's Drinking Habits. Soldier Creek Winery at Fort Dodge on 3rd and on the 9th. the Backcountry Winery at Stratford. And now, Stan Raby and Louine Getter will be talking about where Catholic humor came from for Dan Goggins.
I believe he's a native of Grand Rapids and grew up in Catholic schools, and he still has some nuns that now I think are in retirement that he comes home and visits, and that's, I think, that wonderful relationship that he had is what has given him all of the wonderful ideas.
And that encourages me because, actually, as a non-Catholic, I was a little surprised. You know, I guess that Catholics laugh about, you know, the priests tipping a little bit and so forth. But I was surprised to hear this on the stage, and so I'm encouraged to know that the Catholics all have a sense of humor.
Well, I'm not Catholic. I'm Lutheran, and so I have a wonderful feeling now for the Catholic clergy, and that they are real people too.
The charming thing about these scripts is that we're not laughing at the Catholics. We're laughing them. And they're laughing at the jokes just as much, if not more, than anyone else. Because
they get it.
They get it. It's part of their lives. It's part of what they've known all along. It's like laughing at family members or with family members. We all have these inside jokes. And if everyone else can enjoy them, that's so much the better.
You have been listening to KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM. We have been talking with Stan Raby of Ames and Louine Getter of Webster City about the plays about nuns that will be opening this weekend in central Iowa. And now we'll be hearing from Lynn Artenbaum, who is the assistant director of the new play opening at the Ankeny Community Theater, and we'll be playing for this weekend and the two following weekends, so it's got a 3-week run. Hello, Lynn. Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you so much for letting us call you this morning. We have been deep into the fun of nonsense, but... Such nonsense that we've been having. And Iowa Community Theater Association, of which you, I know, are a member. So could you just talk about what your interactions are with other towns, the informal ones? Because I know you don't just draw your cast and crew from Ankeny, is that correct?
That is correct. We draw cast and crew from Ames, Boone. We've had Johnston, Grimes, Waukee, just kind of all over the central Iowa area. They come to perform in our shows.
What's coming up after Death Trap?
After Death Trap, we will have our December show, and that's called The Regifters. And it's about a couple who, they receive a gift that they're not real fond of, and so they re-gift it. And then they find out that gift was actually very valuable, so they go try to get it back from the couple they gave it to find out that they re-gifted it. And so the whole show is about all these couples trying to be the ones who end up with this gift that nobody wanted in the first place.
Oh, well, that sounds like another good farce.
It is, yes.
And a little something different for Christmas. Well, thank you so much, and we'll... I hope some of our listeners are now aware that Ankeny Community Theater is in our commuting area. So thanks for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
And next we'd like to talk to the other community theater that's in our listening area, and that is Boone, the Boone Community Theater. And we will be talking with the president of the board, John Hoffman. Their fall production was in September, but they'll be doing Barefoot in the Park, a Neil Simon comedy, from December 4th to 12th. And if you're interested in being in it, you should know tryouts are October 6th. Hi, John.
Hello. Good morning.
Well, good morning to you. And please give us a little background for about the community. The Boone Community Theater has its own building, correct?
Yes, we do. We bought an old school building that they were, school was done with it, I guess. And so we're just getting started with it.
And
a bigger building than we need and so we the idea was when we bought it, it was 10 years ago, I think, that we decided we'd want to make it into kind of a cultural center. And so we have other rooms that are being occupied by other people that help round out the culture, and as well as help us pay the utility bill.
And you have a full season. You have many plays, correct?
Yes, indeed. We just finished up with our Agatha Christie. Of course, I think a lot of people are doing Agatha Christie this year because it's her 125th birthday. And so, in addition, we're also at the Boone Community Theater. We're celebrating our 40th season. And so we just finished up with Cards on the Table. It was a really fun production, and again, more of a thriller than the funny thing. But our next show we're coming up with is Barefoot in the Park. That'll be our December show. We're just actually having auditions for that for next Monday and Tuesday. And you can always check our website, BooneCommunityTheater.org, for all the information on that if anybody's interested. And yes, we do also draw people from all over the place. We draw actors and as well as crew from Ames and Ogden, and we had a fellow come in from Yale this last spring for a show. And so we have a guy, actually we had someone from Jefferson, so quite a ways around there. People drive drive in to come be a part of us. It's fun.
Well, that's community theater. It's fun. And
yes, it is.
We now turn to Tuning into Agriculture, a locally produced segment aired during Wednesday's Local Talk by producer Greta Anderson. She is interviewing Jim Hightower of Texas today, nationally acclaimed commentator and humorist, who will be in Des Moines this Saturday for the 60th anniversary bash of the Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement.
Hello, Jim Hightower.
Hey, glad to be with you and tuning in to agriculture.
I'm really excited to see you this weekend at Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement's 40th birthday bash.
Yeah, going to be a bash, too. We're going to have fun, and we're going to talk about some serious stuff, but we're going to have a party as well.
Right. The last time I saw you was in 1999 in Seattle.
My goodness.
That was a party.
Yeah, right. Well, that's a long time ago, but we keep at it.
You know, a lot of our listeners might not know that that you actually serve as the agriculture commissioner for the state of Texas.
I've been involved in food issues since the late 60s when I worked for a great progressive senator from Texas, believe it or not, Ralph Yarborough at the time, who served on the Agricultural Appropriations Committee, and we did a lot of work there, but then moved into the Agribusiness Accountability Project in the early 1970s and really got deeply involved in ag policy issues.
And you were noted for fostering organic production and alternative crops, direct marketing.
Right.
How did you manage to get that kind of agenda through in Texas?
it was a time in which their farmers were really hard hit in late 70s and early 1980s. In fact, I was in Iowa working with some farmers there, and one said to me, "Do you know the difference between a pigeon and a farmer?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, a pigeon can still make a deposit on a John Deere." And it was pretty hard times back in there, where we were losing 50,000 farmers a year at the time. By the way, we're still losing 20,000 farmers a year right now. So the bad times are ebbing back, unfortunately. But we had to have policies to address that, and a state ag commissioner, turns out, had a bit of power that previous ag commissioners hadn't really used, including direct marketing, the ability to certify organic production as a state, which is what the markets wanted, that clarification by a non-biased authority. We had the ability to help to organize co-ops so farmers could sell directly to consumers, to supermarkets, even into the international market, and we did a lot of that. There were no farmers markets in the state of Texas when I came into the Ag Department in 1983. And so we brought some people in who knew how to organize farmers markets and put them out in the countryside to talk to people and, of all sorts, and see, would you like a farmers market? And they invariably said, yes, let's do it now. And so, you know, within a short period of time, within a couple of years, we had more than 100 farmers markets at the time. So it was also a time, Greta, when the farmers and consumers and environmentalists were beginning to come together and teaming up into what I've since called the Upchuck Rebellion. They didn't want industrial food. They wanted real food. They wanted to produce real food. They wanted to buy real food to eat. They wanted food that did not destroy the environment in any way. So that has led to a major grassroots populist rebellion that now is the fastest growing segment of our whole food economy, not just organic, but sustainable, local production, right to restaurants, production going right into the schools, even into prisons. So there's a lot of solutions out there when you just open yourself up and say, here's a little government agency that we'll put to work for you. We'll get the staff people who can help you do it. You decide what you want to do. You run it. You own it. We don't do any of that. We don't manage anything. But we are a catalyst for you. You know, the free and free enterprise is not an adjective, it's a verb. You've got to free up the enterprise of people from the blockages that corporations and conglomerates, monopolies, have established in the marketplace. And if you free them up, then they will do the creative work to make a difference and create an economy that works for all of us.
That's a really common sense kind of approach that I think appeals across the political spectrum. You know, there are a lot of regulations out there that safety regulations and so forth that make it more difficult for small outfits to get into, for instance, feeding schools. Here at our school in Ames, Iowa, we have, you know, it's corporate catered on paper plates, plastic utensils, and out the door all that stuff goes, and start all over again tomorrow. It's amazing, right? In the breadbasket, as they say, of the country, we can't manage to get some locally grown food into our schools.
Exactly, and we had a very hard time getting that started back in the 80s, and in fact, we essentially failed. But other people kept pushing, and now there's some 50,000 school districts in America that have direct food coming directly from the farms in their area. So it's a huge movement that will eventually get to Ames, as it has even here in Texas. Because, as you say, it's just common sense. It works for the farmers, it works for the schools, it works for the kids, it works for the environment, and what's not to like about it? And it's not regulatory, it's very entrepreneurial.
Right. Well, we have two pivotal fights here in Iowa that Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement have been working on, water quality and the Bakken pipeline. And the one, you know, water quality is just an ongoing issue here.
Right.
Of course. Everywhere, yeah. And it's just, it's amazing to see how it's really making the news all over the nation.
Well, you know, since Ronald Reagan, we've essentially had a trust us regulatory policy in which we let profiteers set the terms, and that hasn't worked out very well for us. You know, I just saw a thing out in California. Companies out there are using fracking water from the fracking wells, you know, which are contaminated with hundreds of different chemicals, to spread on farmland. you know, it's like, you know, insanity is loose on the land. Like you couldn't invent anything this crazy. You know, Lily Tomlin once said, "No matter how cynical you get, it's almost impossible to keep up." and that's the case in some of these water situations. And we start with the fact that, of course, water is increasingly scarce. Certainly in California, certainly here in Texas, and it seems to be the new normal of our weather patterns is that we're increasingly in a desert situation, certainly in the southwest part of our nation. You can come up with all kinds of schemes. Well, let's just drain the Great Lakes. Let's build pipelines across America and ship water down so those poor people in Dallas and Houston can water their golf courses. You know, well, that's no solution at all. You've got to learn how to use what you have and to do the best with it. And again, that's to me is the common sense approach. And the good news is we got a lot of people who are doing exactly that, including very inventive farmers and rural communities.
Yeah, I hear a lot more farmers talking about building their soil, which of course
that's
is...
That's it. That's everything. You know, that's something you don't replace. It takes, you know, I forget what it is, 100 years or more to develop another inch of topsoil. So you got to conserve these things. That used to be a conservative principle, conserve. Let's conserve our water. Let's conserve our soil. Let's conserve our air. Let's conserve all the things that are long-term valuable, not just to the present generation, but to future generations.
Yeah. Well, don't get me started on conservatives. Up here in Iowa, we see them all.
Yeah, you got a few there, but, you know, I'm from Texas, so...
That's true.
I can't exactly point fingers.
I'm referring, of course, to our visitors at this at this juncture.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, you know, we had Rick Perry for 14 years, the guy who put the goober in gubernatorial. And he just left a wide swath of damage that unfortunately continues now with Ted Cruz and other of our public officials who want to serve special corporate interests that put money into their campaign trough. And that's all that this is about. It's about money rather than the public good and the community need.
Right. Well, and then the other big issue facing Iowa and championed by ICCI is the stopping of the Bakken pipeline that's going to go diagonally, the company thinks, across the state. I talked to them very early in the process, before they'd even spoken at county forums or anything, and the public relations gal told me they'd already started ordering the parts.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, really?
That is really stunning. And it's not unlike the Keystone XL pipeline, which is supposedly coming through Texas, well, from Canada all the way through the center of our country, crossing waterways, watersheds, just as the Balkan pipeline does. This is insanity. I mean, pipelines, as anybody who looks at it knows, or if you just read the daily paper, you'll find case after case of pipelines explode, pipelines leak, pipelines get loose, pipelines contaminate. And this is not anything to be taken casually. And worse to me, and infuriating to people, landowners to start with, is that these corporations are allowed to use the state's power of eminent domain to condemn property. You know, we had a wonderful woman named Julia Trigg. She's up in northeast Texas, a farmer, third-generation farm family. And here comes the Keystone XL pipeline people saying, we're going to put a pipeline across your property, and here's $20,000. Well, no, she said, you're crossing my water in the process, and we don't want it. So next thing she knows, suddenly there's a court order. She was not even allowed to participate in the decision, saying that, yes, they can do it, because they got a rubber stamp from the regulatory body at the state level to say that this foreign corporation has power over you to establish that pipeline. Well, Julia Trigg is on a warpath now, and they crossed the wrong woman. She's about 6 foot 2 inches tall. She was a basketball player at Texas A&M, a very, very tough lady, and she's going all over the state now fighting this power of eminent domain.
We have quite the same thing here with attempted legislation put forward by Democrats that would strictly limit eminent domain seizures to utilities that are actually serving the people of the state, not just serving somebody else out there or maybe even the politicians themselves.
And as I understand it, the Balkan pipeline, certainly it's true of the Keystone pipeline, is, you know, they do it in the name of we must be independent from foreign oil. Well, this is tar sands oil and that stuff. That's not going to be going to us. That's going to be going to Japan and to China and to Brazil and to Europe. That's why they're shipping it down to the Port Arthur, the important word there is port. They have refineries there with the ports to refine that oil and then put it on the boats and ship it off to other people. And, of course, there are no real jobs attached to this. The total jobs, permanent jobs that would be involved in the XL pipeline are something like 50, which is not exactly a major jobs program that warrants endangering our environment and our rights as a people.
Hmm. Yeah, and the regulatory agencies that do the approval, the Iowa Utilities Board, or in the case of water issues, it's the Environmental Protection Commission here in Iowa. All of these are boards made up of Branstad appointees. Yep. They are representatives of industry through and through.
Yeah, we have the same thing, and most states do these days, which is why CCI is doing such a great job, and groups like that, dealing with public policy issues by rallying the people themselves outside of the politicians and going directly into forums to change things, including changing some of the office holders. You know, Woody Guthrie said years ago, said, rich folks took your money with politics. You can get it back with politics. And that's what we have to do. Not only partisan politics and elections, but the politics of civic engagement, going directly at the bosses and bankers and big shots and bastards and BSers who feel entitled to run roughshod over us.
Well, that's a powerful message I know you're going to be delivering to the ICCI 40th birthday bash. And I think here in Iowa, we're finally getting it that we got to laugh because, yeah. You know, if we don't laugh, we're going to be crying.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Mr. Humor is our friend, and it sustains us and also helps us reach out to other people who will see through humor the seriousness of what's going on here and why they need to get involved with us.
Okay, well, thank you. I look forward to seeing you.
Me too. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Today, we've been talking with Stan Raby, Loreen Getter, Rebecca Manchusi, Lynn Artenbaum, and John Hoffman about community theater in Central Iowa with previews of upcoming shows. Tuning into Agriculture Today consisted of an interview with Jim Hightower by Greta Anderson. Music you heard was The Happy Farmer by Robert Schumann. A Local Talk is engineered by Jonah DeGeest. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. This show, like all local talk shows, is repeated at noon and 7 p.m. at 89.1 FM, as well as streaming live on KHOIFM.org. As listener and contributor, you keep us on the air. Thank you. Comments and contributions may be sent to KHOIFM.org or stop in at the Pantorium at 410 Douglas Avenue, 50010 in Ames. Thanks for listening and
see you again
on the radio.